Why do we still have bad habits? And we know they're bad habits. Why can't we break them? And that always puzzled me. We're intelligent people. Why can't we do that? We want to lose weight. Go online, Google it. 30 million responses, how you can lose weight. Pick one and go. Why don't we do that? Why don't we stay on track? And those things really challenged me. So I went to the top sources. I mean, I have my own experiences on growth and failure and just kind of the momentum shifts in life. This I know for a fact. Life and business are hard, are challenging, are filled with obstacles that we have to get around, through, and over. And to stay consistent and operate at a peak level performance is difficult. And what I found, there's some core elements that fall way beneath the surface that most people don't examine that hold them back from being and operating at their peak level performance.
Oh, such a good question.
Well, where do you come with these questions? That's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome back to the Your Living Brand Live Show. It's Ben Baker. Thank you very much for coming back, my wonderful audience. Every single week, you guys are amazing. You listen in, you share, you reshare, and you correspondence with me on LinkedIn. I love that. Come to Podcast Host for Hire or Your Brand Marketing. I post in both places. Tell me what you guys like. Every Wednesday at 10 o'clock, we drop another episode and there's always something new to talk about. So tell me what you like. Tell me what you don't like. Tell me who you want to talk to and I'll bring them on the show. So thank you very much for being an amazing audience. This week, we got Michael Altshuler. Now, you guys are going to love Michael because he talks about peak performance for business and individuals. He's talked all over the world. He's an incredible keynote speaker. He's an amazing sales coach. So, Michael, thank you and welcome to the show.
Ben, that's a lot of pressure, big shoes to fill, but it's a pleasure to be here. And I want to thank your audience for listening. And my goal is to entertain a little bit and to leave you better than I found you. So you leave with some actionable ideas that will make you and your organization better.
Well, I just got off your website about a couple hours ago. I always like to look at people's website before we talk. And I love your sizzle reels. And I'm going to put them in the actual show notes. So when people go and they listen to the show, go and take a look at the sizzle reel. I love the story about your son. We're going to leave it at that. But you know what? His son is a natural born salesperson. So we'll leave it there. So Michael, why don't we just start with a little bit of history about who are you? Where did you come from? Where are you now and what motivates you?
Well, first and foremost, I operate by a core set of values. My faith, family, and friends mean the world to me. So that's what guides my life. And besides that, from a business standpoint, I hail from Atlantic City, New Jersey, Monopoly in Miss America, and had a business that I started at 21 years old, copier business out of my 650 square foot apartment. I grew it to a multi-million dollar company by the time I was 29, became a millionaire, made millions, lost millions along the way on my entrepreneurial journey. So I have great lessons learned both ways. I sold my company to a multi-billion dollar company. And if you sell your company and you live in New Jersey and it's in February, the dead of winter, most people don't know this. There's a law in New Jersey and New York that if you sell your company dead of winter, that you must move to Boca Raton, Florida. So here I am. And who am I to break the law?
So absolutely.
I'm in Florida. And when I sold my business, it was, like I said, it was a copier business. When I moved here, I became a motivational speaker and a sales and peak performance coach. And that's what I do. I love people. And more importantly, I love changing and improving and transforming their lives.
Well, you and I have a lot in common because I spent a lot of time in the copier business. I'm an ex-Xerox guy. I worked for Xerox for a number of years. So you and I could talk speeds and feeds at a different time, but it's an amazing business, and where it was and where it is and where it's going is a digital transformation on its own. But let's talk about peak performance, because that's where your jam is. You know, that's your sweet spot, is looking at, says, what does it take for individuals and teams to to consistently operate at peak levels. Because, you know, we can all be there for a day. We can all be there for an hour. We have days that we're up. We have days that we're down. We have days that we just don't want to even get out of bed. And there's days that we can shoot the moon. But it's, I guess it's leveling out the highs and bringing up the lows to be able to make sure people can be consistent year after year, decade after decade. That's got to be a skill. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, first of all, it was really, I got into that field of peak performance. I was mostly in sales and enterprise sales training. And what perplexed me and challenged me and kind of I was upset over it was the fact that sales teams would all be in the room, learn the same sales methodology, and 20, if you go by the 80-20 rule or 20-60-80, 20% would apply it. The middle 60% would sometimes and sometimes not. The bottom 20% wouldn't do anything with it. And I didn't understand why the same information would fall on deaf ears. That was one thing. The second thing that really challenged me was even in my own personal life, why do we know we should do certain things to live a richer, fuller life, and we don't do it? Why don't we do the things we know we should do? We should work out. We should eat healthier. We should have better relationships with our significant other. We should work harder. We should work smarter. We should have a better morning routine. Why do we still have bad habits that we know they're bad habits? Why can't we break them? And that always puzzled me. We're intelligent people. Why can't we do that? We want to lose weight. Go online, Google it. 30 million responses, how you can lose weight. Pick one and go. Why don't we do that? Why don't we stay on track? And those things really challenged me. So I went to the top sources. I mean, I have my own experiences on growth and failure and just kind of the momentum shifts in life. This I know for a fact. Life and business are hard, are challenging, are filled with obstacles that we have to get around, through, and over. And to stay consistent and operate at a peak level performance is difficult. And what I found, there's some core elements that fall way beneath the surface that most people don't examine that hold them back from being and operating at their peak level performance. And that's what I coach on.
So let's get into that. I mean, because you're right. Everybody makes these wonderful New Year's resolutions. You know, I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to be healthier. I'm going to be a better spouse. We all make these wonderful, grandiose ideas of things that we're going to do. And by January 10th, they're in the toilet. They're gone. I mean, how many people buy gym memberships on January 5th? And by January 30th, they forget where the gym is, let alone when they're going to be there the next time. So what are the things that are the demotivators for people that keep people demotivated? And how do we overcome them?
Yeah, it goes actually beneath the surface of motivation. If motivation were enough, we'd be able to do it, but it goes deeper than that. Let me share what that means. First of all, we have a homeostasis, which is part of our makeup, that everything is an equalizing system in our body. If we have a blood pressure rises, our body is constantly trying to equalize it and make it normal. So everything wants to go back to normal. You could, that even happens with our habits, that they say first we make our habits and our habits make us. For us to grow and for us to get better, for us to transform and be a better version of ourselves, to change in essence, that's going to require us to move out of our comfort zone. And to do that, we have to be comfortable being uncomfortable to stick with it. The great ones, the world class, the elite, those that are most successful in this world are comfortable being uncomfortable and uncomfortable being comfortable. So how do you do that? Remember that we're human beings. We're not human doings. We have to be more before we do more, before we have more. So what does that mean about being more? That you can't do it just on external motivation. You have to go internally. And the first thing is the mindset. I spoke to Dr. Carol Dweck, arguably the top thought leader in mindset. I want to bring my audience the best information. She's a professor of psychology, Stanford University, and literally wrote the book called Mindset. And a mindset is you either have a fixed mindset or a growth mindset. Normally, you're 99% of one, 1% of the other. A fixed mindset believes that the skills, talents, and abilities you're born with, well, that's going to define you, along with your circumstances and conditions in life. You say, this is as good as I'll ever be. It's my genetic makeup, my DNA. And by the way, a fixed mindset never reaches their full potential.
So is it fatalist versus optimist? Or does it go beyond that?
Yeah, it goes beyond that because a few things they do. They believe that because they're born a certain way, they put no effort in getting better because they don't believe they can get better. They believe that it's fixed how they are, how they're made.
So if I'm fat, I'm always going to be fat. Doesn't matter what I do. I'm going to be fat, so why should I even try?
If I didn't get good grades, I'm always going to be dumb. If I was told I was dumb, I'm always going to be dumb. So they hang out with people. There's some traits there. They hang out with people that are less talented, less skilled, less knowledgeable than they are because they it would be a slam on their personal esteem, their self-esteem, if they hung out with people better than them and they wouldn't be able to take that. So they hang out with people of lesser capability. They never reach their full potential. Now, growth mindset, on the other hand, there are folks that certainly understand they're born with their genetic makeup. Their skills, talents, and abilities are what they're born with. But they believe, and this is the first key of a growth mindset and the huge differentiator between a growth and a fixed, is they believe through effort, sheer effort, with the right roadmap or blueprint, will accomplish the objectives. You heard of the book, 10,000 Hours, the lesson with Seth wrote about 10,000 hours you put into something. The right blueprint, the right effort, commensurate with that will be how good you get at something. So the first way to change is to get better at something is to just say, I'm going to put effort in. Now, that's easier said than done. Michael Phelps, greatest Olympic athlete of all time, 23 gold medals, crazy good. If he was born genetically blessed, and people can say, well, he's long, he's lanky. There's plenty of people born long and lanky. He wasn't doing the backstroke in his mommy's belly and the freestyle on the way out. The bottom line is Michael Phelps had a coach when he was a teenager, Bob Bauman, and he worked 6 hours a day, 6 days a week to be the best in the world by far. That only comes with effort, and that only comes with how do you do that? How do you stretch beyond your comfort zone and stay there consistently? And that is a coach, accountability and encourager, someone who charges your battery, and it's your why. As Simon Sinek said in the book, Start With Why, the bigger the why, the bigger the try. Attach pain to the why. If I don't do it, this will happen to me and it has to be super painful. If I do whatever this goal is, work towards this goal, this is what I'll achieve. That's going to be the driving force to push you through the discomfort of working out as hard as you need to work out and staying consistent.
Right. And I love the fact that you quote Simon Sinek. I love the why, because you're right. Too many people focus on the what and how, and they don't focus on the why, because the why is the motivation. What's the end goal in mind? What are we trying to achieve? Because we all have to go through pain. I was telling somebody the other day, in 2018, there was 500,000 podcasts. Today, there's 2.5 million and growing. 90% of those podcasts fail in 10 episodes or less, because people don't have a why behind what they're doing when they're creating the podcast, and they get frustrated and they give up and they go, this is way too hard, because they don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. They don't see where they're going with it, and they don't see how it's going to benefit them in the long term. I agree with and disagree with one thing that you're saying is that people that sit there and say, if I only work harder, I'm going to get better. If I put in more effort, I'm going to get better. I take it one step further, and I want to know what your thought is on this. There's certain things we just don't have innate talent to do, but we can always bring people in that do have those talents and make them our partners.
No doubt.
And I'm a big believer if just because you personally can't do something doesn't mean you can't surround yourself with great people that can enable you to do great things. And I think that that's really where a lot of people fall down. They say, if I can't do it myself, I can't do it. I'm a big believer of, if you can't do it yourself, surround yourself with people who can help you do it. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, and I want to say this, that we are not independent people. We are dependent people. So anyone who ever said, we grow up and say, be independent. The truth of the matter is life and business are too hard. We all depend. Now I'm a believer. So I depend on the Lord for strength. I depend on friends. I depend on colleagues. I depend on coaches. You never saw a pro football player come off the field after a bad play with his head down, come off the field and immediately not be greeted by other players pumping him up. So he changes his mindset immediately, changes attitude immediately. So the next play, he's playing at a peak level performance. None of us can go this road alone, business or life, and operate at a peak level performance consistently without having what I call encouragers in our life, not discouragers, battery chargers, but not battery drainers. And I want to qualify something. I agree with you. I always have, when you have a company, you always hire around your weaknesses. So I totally agree with that we're not good at everything. There's things I am terrible at, like IT, I can't even spell the word IT. I think I just did, but yeah. So I hired.
But you forgot to put the dots in between, so that's okay.
Exactly. So at the end of the day, you definitely want to bring people in. But if you say, this is my passion, this is my purpose. And if it's your passion, your purpose, then find the coaches, find the information, and to put the effort in with the right blueprint, the right roadmap, and the people supporting you, encouraging you, and holding you accountable, then I believe you're on the right path too. But I think the qualification there would be, this is my passion and my purpose to be my best at this. You're going to have to put the time. And I just read a book called Peak Performance. It's stress, going beyond your comfort zone, plus rest equals growth. And I never knew this. The rest is understated.
Oh, it's absolutely understated. Ask any hockey player, ask any athlete. You're as good as the amount of time that you rest. As much as you operate at the threshold when you're on and you're performing, you need to have that period of rest to be able to recover and be able to do it again.
Yeah, let me give you the scientific numbers on that I just learned. So I'm going to say them, A, so I remember them, and B, this is a takeaway. For everyone listening to this right now, this is scientific evidence of what we need to do to operate at an optimal level of performance for you and all your employees for the long haul. Peak level performance for the long haul. How do we get that? We all want that in our personal and professional lives. We want that for our team members, our associates. This is how you do it. Scientifically based. You do 50 to 90 minutes, and it's based on, by the way, the reason there's a range there is it's based on the individual and what you're working on. So it can be very deeply intense work, or it can be something that's a little more superficial, more grind work, but not really, you're deeply into it. You know, a lot of headspace that you're going to use or not use. So 50 to 90 minutes of intense work at whatever you're working on, mentally, physically, spiritually, whichever it is, doesn't matter, 50 to 90 minutes, intense work, 7 to 21 minutes break. Now, like I said, there's a range there. So you pick what feels right for you and what you're working on. So 50 to 90 minutes, based on science, that's how long you should be intense with whatever you're working on. Push yourself beyond your comfort zone to stretch, reach, and get better. And then 7 to 21 minutes rest. How you rest is up to you. And they cited examples in this book, Peak Performance. They cited examples of marathon runners, of Einstein. You know, some like to take a walk in the woods, in nature, to recharge. Some would listen to music. Some would meditate. So whatever your rest is, whatever feels right for you and recharges your battery, that's what you do.
And I agree with that. When I'm doing leadership training, and before COVID, it was 2 days of intensive, you know, training. You'd start at 8 o'clock in the morning, and you're going to 5:30 or 6 o'clock at night for 2 days straight. But I'd never go more than 90 minutes. I'd never go back to 90 minutes at either a coffee break or go stretch or whatever. Say, guys, go take 15 minutes and go refocus. Because after 90 minutes, you look in their eyes and they're done. They're full. And you can see that these people are completely full. They've lost focus. They can't concentrate. They can't bring any more information in. And taking that time to get away from it, just to mentally do something else, they all came back 15 minutes later and were ready to go again. So I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah, and this was great to have scientific evidence. And I never knew this, that I was more a grinder, just push, push, push. But the reality is, and proper sleep, they talk about sleep is, there's so much scientific evidence how powerful 8 hours sleep is, that you think you're missing out on something. You're not getting stuff done when you're taking these breaks. Actually, it showed, and the metrics and the KPIs, people actually got more done, were more productive when they took these breaks after working intensely for the 50 to 90 minutes. And I always like to share new information with audiences like yours, Ben. And this is new. You may not have known this, but did you know they opened up a new restaurant on the moon? Yep, I'm here, the bearer of great news. The food is great. There's just no atmosphere.
Oh, God, you and my wife would get along really well with those type of jokes.
You can tell I'm a dad. That's a dad joke.
Okay. That is definitely a dad joke.
Yeah, yeah.
So a couple of minutes ago, you said something that just stuck with me, and I've been thinking about it. And it comes down to detractors. I mean, we've all talked about the motivators in our life. We have to have the coaches. We have to have the team leaders. We have to have people that can bring us up and help us along the way and lift us when we're not able to lift ourselves. But the world, unfortunately, is full of a lot of detractors. And that could be family, that could be friends, that could be a boss, that could be a bad client. There's lots of people in our lives that either purposely or not purposely bring us down. So how do we deal with those people? Because some of these people we can shove into a corner. Some people we can sit there and say thank you, but no thank you, and be able to remove ourselves from them dramatically. But there's a lot of people that, for whatever reason, they're going to continue to be part of our lives. So how do we mitigate that? How do we rise above the detractors and the people that are negative within our lives to be able to allow us to have our peak performance?
Yeah, great question. Challenging question. I'm glad you're not giving me the easy questions today, Ben. Yeah, that's a great question. Normally, the answer to that would be you cut them loose if they're not family members. You have to get rid of the battery drainers and surround yourself with battery chargers. So that would be if they're not family and you can't cut them loose. Either remember, people are going to either bring you down or they're going to elevate you. And if they don't elevate you and they're downers in your life, have real, transparent, open conversations about how this is, how it makes you feel, and try to get them to see a different way to communicate more positively, and also go a little deeper if you want as to why they, maybe it's part of their upbringing or what their belief system. So you want to dive into that. The other thing is, remember, we can, and it's much easier said than done. I talk about self-talk. We have 50 to 70,000 thoughts that go through our head every day, 65% of which are negative. I had someone communicate to me. I just got back from New York. I live in Florida now. And I had someone, a woman in line, I kid you not, and this is a perfect example of this. She's one of those negative people. She turned around. I'm like 3 feet away from her. It's a line to get in to check in. She said, please don't stand so close to me, in a real, like, why are you approaching my space? And like, she almost yelled at me. And I apologized, but I remember the New Jersey me wanted to come out and say, there's a nicer way to say it. But what I did was, we have a choice as to how we respond to situations and how we internalize it. And really, when you think about it, regardless of what a person says to you, it's up to you to internalize it and say, I feel sorry that that person felt that way, but I'm not going to let that become my reality, my attitude. I remember I was on the park when I lived in New Jersey, come back from New York. And I remember, to true story, the toll taker, it was 3 a.m. and I gave him $5 and there was change. I said, hi, how are you tonight? And he literally looked at me and said, you don't want to know how I'm doing. You want me to make a mistake on the change. I know people like you. I was like, as stunning as that is, I was stunned. Now, the knee-jerk reaction, I'm a pretty intense person, as you could tell. I was ready to slam him. What are you talking about? I figure you're in a 6x6 booth. It's 3 a.m. What an existence this must be. It sucks. And I'm just trying to make your life a little better and show you that some love and some compassion and kindness. That's what I was doing. And then he treated me exactly the opposite. So I was going to land blast him. And I just got done reading a book by Deepak Chopra called 7 Spiritual Laws of Success, the Law of Karma and Dharma and Pure Potentiality. I remember in the moment I had a decision to make. My immediate knee-jerk reaction and how I felt was super negative and in the attack mode. And then I said, you know what? I went from anger to empathy. I felt sorry for him. Anyone that would respond in that manner to that comment that I made must be going through a lot up here and in here. And I felt sorry for him. And I kind of said a prayer for him. I did. I said an internal prayer for him. I hope whatever you're dealing with, it gets better and that you live a more peaceful life. I mean, because he certainly wasn't peaceful with how he reacted. And when I left that situation, I shifted my thinking, my processing of what he said, which anyone would be pissed off at that. When I shifted how I was thinking about it, and I went from anger to empathy, it shifted and changed everything in my world. I wasn't negative. I wasn't feeling negative. I wasn't feeling anger, but it was a conscious decision. James Mapes, in a great book called Quantum Leap Thinking, said this: every situation in life is either a CBS or a BBS, a current view of the situation, and you have the ability to make it a better view of the situation. That's your choice in that moment. And I made it a better view, and he benefited because we didn't have a fight, and I benefited. And everyone I came in contact with afterwards, not at 3 a.m, but normally, would have a positive result because my energy and my mojo was positive.
Well, as the expression goes, you can't control how people act, but you can control how people react. And I agree with you. I agree with you in terms of empathy, but I want to go back to one thing. Is you talked about having conversations with people, you know, being able to have dialogues with people that are challenging, this, that, the other thing. But what happens when it's your boss or your boss's boss? When it's a position where it's unequal amounts of power and you have somebody that sits there and goes, hey, listen, my way or the highway. And, you know, we need to sit there and realize where is our ability to react and what should we be thinking about in our lives if we're in a situation where it's unequal amount of power, we can't do anything, we're not going to get this person to change. Is it time for us to walk away?
Yeah, and I think you have to weigh that. And we've all heard this, that weighing things before, that you weigh the pros and the cons, and then whatever is greater, but you weight them also, W-E-I-G-H-T. You not only weigh them, but you weight what you're weighing. So if one has 10 and one has 3 pros and cons, how important is that one? Just like picking a significant other, you have deal breakers. You have the must-haves, like-to-haves, and, wow, this would be a cherry on top of the sundae if we have this. So you have to look at this. So when you weigh the pros and the cons in that situation you're talking about, Ben, you simply say, you know what, this is, and you have to understand, peel back the onion and say, you're working more than you're doing anything else in your life. If you're not feeling a sense of fulfillment and gratification and value, and that's the difficult part when you get a job, is you're not just working, you're working more for the person than the company. So the company has a culture and standards, but if you have a bad boss, it's a bad company. So to your point, Ben, I think at the end of the day, if you have a bad boss or a bad leader or leadership in your company and you can't get any change, effectuate any change in that by asking good questions and sharing your point of view, then since you're working and that's affecting your daily level of happiness and joy and satisfaction, then yeah, I think you should make a move.
So let's flip that around.
Sure.
And realize that most people that come into management positions are tacticians that were good at what they were do, and they are promoted. They aren't given leadership training. They're not given coaching training. They're not given listening skills training. They're not given coaching training. They don't have a lot of skills, and a lot of it's not their own fault, but they don't have the skills needed to lead. What are the things that leaders should focus on? And I'm talking everywhere from frontline managers all the way up to CEOs should focus on in order to be able to help their teams operate at peak performance.
I'm a big proponent, not everyone is that you lead by example. I believe in, if I tell someone, you know, it's important to be healthy and be in shape, it'd be difficult for me to say that and really mean that if I'm not in shape. I want to be authentic. I'm far from perfect. My wife's in the other room. We could just ask her. She tells me all the time that I said, am I high maintenance? She says, oh yeah, but you have many redeeming qualities. So I'm constantly working on how do I get better in what areas. But in terms of leadership, when people are promoted based on what they've done and not given the proper training on what they need to do to be good leaders, I'm a big modeling person. You know, model other great leaders in your organization or training. And it needs to be mandatory for companies, if we're going to put someone in a leadership position, that they know, have to understand what a great leader is, what a great leader does. And there's certain common denominators. Success leaves clues in any business, in any part of a business, that what all great leaders do. Just look at them, find out what they do, look at the trainings that they offer, and go deep into that. And that has to be, I think, mandatory, especially because leadership is affecting all the troops. It's huge in terms of a company's culture and how customers are being treated.
This is probably one of the last questions I'm going to ask. How then do you help people get the best out of themselves? Because everybody's an individual. Everybody walks into the office with their own hopes, wants, needs, fears, desires, goals, aspirations. And you need to help both the individuals become better versions of themselves, and you need to help them work with the other members to become a better team. So where would you start to be able to help those individuals become better versions of themselves and also to help them become better versions of the team?
Great last question. I'm going to give you a checklist. This is what I believe from all my readings and my own personal and professional experience, what you have to do. Number one, what do you want to be? Why do you want to be it? Understand your why. What do you want? Who do you want to be in your life? Why do you want to be it? Why do you want to do that? And attach a strong why to that. Remember, there's two huge forces in the world. The outside forces in the world, which are pervasive, telling you what to value, what's important. Social media, buy this, buy that. You never saw a hearse pulling a U-Haul. The bottom line, it's about people and it's about relationships. Keep your value, be centered, have values, keep your eye centered on those values and know why you want to be the person you want to be. Attach pain if you don't do it, pleasure if you do. And then remember, you're keeping the outside enemy outside, these outside influences. You also have some negative things inside your own head, bad habits and things like that. You want to surround yourself with people and things. You heard that we're the sum total of our five closest friends. That's only partial to what you need to do. You need to surround yourself with your five. You are the sum total of your five closest friends. And let's say they're encouragers and supporters and people who hold you accountable to who you say you are and who you say you want to become. But also have things around you that constantly remind you and trigger you as to what you want to be. I have water here because water is essential for health. So I'm always keeping water in front of me. I have healthy chickpeas in front of me to keep that. So I eat good, healthy snacks. I have weights in front of my desk. My wife says you're going to trip over them. I said, exactly. Out of sight, out of mind, insight, in mind. You're getting all these messages from the outside world. You need to combat them with things that you want to be, do, and have by putting them in your view all the time. And that's what I do. Wherever you go in my house, you're going to see a Peloton. You're going to see weights. You're going to see steppers. You're going to see everything from health. You're going to see healthy food. Okay? You're going to see my Lord, pictures of my Lord in the house. You're going to see everything that I say my values are around to remind me of who I am and who I want to be. So you need those things because we all fall off the wagon. You need people and things to constantly remind you of who you are, who you want to be, and what your why is.
I love it. Michael, people can get a hold of you at michaelaltshuler.com. That's probably the best way for people to get in touch with you, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, I'll make sure that it's in the show notes and everybody can get it because you're dropping some gold here and people are going to want to get in touch with you.
Can I share one more thing?
You can, and then I got one last question for you. So go ahead.
Okay. Do you want me to say it's how I close? It's something very meaningful. I can close with it if you want to ask your question first.
I'll ask my last question, then you can close with it.
Okay.
Because here's the last question I ask everybody as I let them out the door. When you get off the stage or you come out of a meeting and you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
That this guy really, really deeply cares about helping me become the best version of myself and wants to make my world, my sphere of influence, my family, my personal world, everything better. He genuinely cares about that. And he brings everything he has to give us that, his energy, his heart, his mind, his soul. And I feel his genuineness and sincerity. And he gave great information from the head and the heart.
I love it. And what's the last thing you wanted to say?
14 years ago, I had a woman in the audience. Her name was Lynn Guidreau. And the speech that I delivered was called Make a Difference, Leave a Legacy, How to Live a Right Side Up Life in an Upside Down World. And a big part of that, of course, is living your values, with the outside world being pervasive to say, no, live my values. No, you got to live yours. And her grandmother had passed away. She wrote me a letter and said, your speech really made an impact on my life. And my grandmother passed away and she left me this poem. And I wanted to kind of reciprocate and hopefully this poem will uplift you like your speech uplifted me. And I close all my programs with this poem that Lynn Guidreau gave me. And the poem is by Linda Ellis. It's called The Dash. I read of a man who stood to speak at the funeral of a friend. He referred to the dates on her tombstone from the beginning to the end. He noticed it first came her date of birth and spoke the second date with tears. But he said that what mattered most of all was that dash between those years. For that dash represents all the time that she spent alive on earth. And now only those who loved her know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we have, the car, the house, the cash, What matters how we live and love and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. Are there things you'd like to change? For you never know how much time is left that could still be rearranged. If we could just slow down enough to consider what's true and real and always try to understand the way other people feel. If we could be less quick to anger and show appreciation more and love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. If we could treat each other with respect and more often wear a smile, remembering that the special dash might only last a little while. So when your eulogy is being read with your life's actions to rehash, will you be proud of the things they say about how you spent your dash? It's my sincerest hope, wish, and prayer that each of you spends your dash in a way that will make a real difference in the lives of your coworkers, your colleagues, your friends, but most importantly, your loved ones.
Michael, that's pure magic. And I absolutely want a copy of that because that is an incredible piece to way to live your life. Thank you for being an amazing guest. Thank you for inspiring me, inspiring my audience, and making this time even more valuable.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Ben. I appreciate it.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?